Hey, what's up, guys? It's Jordan with the Laundromat Resource Podcast, show number 62. And I am pumped that you're here today, as always, because today we have the number one most requested repeat podcast guest, Andrew Cunningham, on the show again with us. And you might remember him from the episode where I called him the human laundromat encyclopedia. This guy knows this business backwards and forward. And man, today is no exception when it comes to him sharing a bunch of wisdom. We're going to be dissecting the process of buying a laundromat. And I loved this interview with Andrew because the stuff that he talks about is obviously going to be beneficial for anyone looking to buy their first laundromat, but there's a ton of stuff in there that he talks about that I think is going to be super valuable for anyone, even veterans, buying their next laundromat, expanding their laundromat portfolio. So super good episode, as always, with Andrew, and I can't wait to get into it. We'll do that in just a second. But real quick, I just wanted to say a quick thank you to everyone who participated in discussion around last week's episode, show number 61. If you haven't listened to it yet, you can head over to laundromatresource.com/show61. I'll put a link to that in the show notes, which will be at laundromatresource.com/show62. And if you're on YouTube, you can check them down below in the description. I'll have the links to this and everything else we talk about in those two places. So check that out. But quick thank you to everyone who participated in that discussion. I thought there was a lot of really great discussion. I think that that's going to really help propel our industry forward. So, man, if you haven't jumped into that conversation yet, jump into that conversation. We'd love to hear, you know, what your take on everything is. And let's keep pushing our industry forward, going to the next level. All right. Also, I just wanted to be super clear on this, that my desire is for everybody in this industry to be doing well. And for those who are serving the industry, you know, I talked about in last week's episode, the manufacturers, the distributors, the brokers, the CLA, for all of us who are trying to serve this industry, I am for all of us doing better. I'm for all of us doing better for laundromat owners. I think laundromat owners, the individual owner operators, are the core of this industry. And I am for anyone providing value to individual owner and operators. And I want there to be more of that in our industry. So I just want to be super clear that I am for those who are giving value to the industry. So, all right, without much further ado, let's jump into it with Andrew Cunningham for his second round on the podcast right after this. All right, guys, today's episode is brought to you by Atmosphere TV. You may remember back in episode 34 when Atmosphere TV's Mike Kelly joined me on the podcast. It was an epic, epic episode. If you haven't listened to it, show 34, laundromatresource.com/show34. Go check it out. It's incredible. A ton of value there. One of the things we talked about is just the importance of creating a good, positive atmosphere in your laundromat. And I was just rereading the book by Simon Sinek, Start With Why. And one of the things that really stands out to me is that people don't make purchase decisions based on, you know, the logic of, you know, any decision that they're making to spend their money. It's more based on a feeling and an association. And so it's really important to create a positive feeling, a positive atmosphere, no pun intended, in your laundromat to help people associate this chore that most people don't like doing with something positive. Atmosphere TV is an incredible way to help improve the atmosphere of your laundromat. And basically, if you haven't heard of it, what it is it has 50 plus channels created specifically for businesses, with everything from sports clips, hilarious fail videos, jaw dropping videos from all over the world. There's automobile channels. There's a ton of stuff. My kids love, love, love it. And my customers love it. Atmosphere TV could be a great way to either supplement your cable, or a lot of us laundromat owners are cutting our cable bill completely and running Atmosphere TV. They're they're designed to be used with no audio, but they also do have an audio option. That way you can kind of design the atmosphere of your laundromat the way that you want it. So get rid of cable, get rid of those news channels that are bringing negativity into your laundromat, and fill your laundromat with positive videos that bring positive vibes to your customers with Atmosphere TV. And if you use the code word, the keyword, the promo code, I don't know, resource, promo code resource, then they're going to waive your setup fee. And now everything is going to be free. There's no monthly fee for it. You can use it for free in your laundromat, and it's going to bring a vibe to your atmosphere. So check out atmosphere.tv. I'll put a link down in the description on YouTube or in the show notes. Check it out there. Make sure you use the keyword resource. That way you can get that thing for free. And, or if you'd like, email Mike at mike.kelly@atmosphere.tv. One last thing I wanted to remind you before we jump into it with Andrew is that if you're listening to this right when this comes out, this coming Thursday, which is July 1st, 2021, we are doing a live webinar. It's free, with Alex Jakowski of Sense, talking about the future of the laundromat industry. And we've been talking about this on the a few of the last episodes of the podcast, talking about, you know, what is happening in this industry, where this industry is going. And Alex from Sense is going to talk to us a little bit more. I'm going to be there with him, and we're going to be talking about this. It'll be an opportunity for you to ask questions. It's going to be an awesome time. So make sure you register for that just on the homepage. Again, there'll be a link in the show notes and down below if you're on YouTube, laundromatresource.com. At the top of the page, there's a spot for you to sign up for that to get the link to join us on the webinar. Again, that's Thursday, July 1st, July already, man, July 1st, 2021. And that's at 4 o'clock Pacific time, 7 o'clock Eastern time, 4 o'clock Best Coast time, 7 o'clock Least Coast time. Can I say that? No, Beast Coast time, 7 o'clock Beast Coast time. All right. Hopefully we'll see you guys there. And without further ado, let's jump into it with Andrew. All right. We have back Andrew Cunningham. Andrew, I've got to say that you are the most requested repeat visitor that I have gotten. People want to hear more from you. So thank you for spending some more time with me and all of us talking laundromats. How's it going, man?
It's going well. And thanks for the kind words. Yeah. It's exciting. I got a couple of boosts on the last podcast, and I've been moving along swiftly since. So it's good.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know what? If you're listening to this or watching it on YouTube or whatever, and you haven't checked out his last episode, it was literally just a wealth of knowledge. So I'll link to that in the show notes. And also, if you're on YouTube, I'll put it down below so you can click over to that and watch that one also, because you will not regret that. But man, I am excited to chat again with you. I know that even with two episodes, we'll just be scratching the surface, but I think we'll have a lot of fun. One of the things I thought would be good to talk about that I haven't really specifically talked about on the podcast is I want to talk about buying laundromats. There's a lot of people looking to buy their laundromats for the first time, but we also have a lot of people who are veterans buying laundromats. And I know that, you know, you got some stuff to say to all of us, whether we've done it before or have never done it before. So I'm excited about that. But let's talk about buying laundromats. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, that's an interesting question. You know, I think, first of all, I think it's a great business. I will tell you that till the day I die. I think that it's probably one of those businesses that time forgot. And
what do you mean by that?
The thought process of people going, oh my God, people are actually washing clothes. It's just one of those that finally caught up to, you know, fast food came fast. Hey, everybody's eating, but not really laundromats. And I don't think it was until maybe 2000s that 2005, there just went and exploded, you know? And so what we're faced with right now is there's a reasonable amount of laundromats that are on the market today for sale. Mm-hmm. However, they're more difficult to buy because they're probably are most because shorter leases, higher rents, and different valuations are starting to play in here. It's what's acceptable and what's not. And there are so many different levels to go on to talk about laundromats, the rate of return, 20 to 25%. Why 20 versus 25? Well, at 20, you're probably getting a shorter lease or a higher rents, or the rent to gross ratio, the rent divided into the gross revenues, is above 25%, and it's compounding at 3% a year annually. And so if you don't have a game plan as you are looking to buy it, in other words, what would be my business plan in year one, two, or three, if you can go that far out, at least the first year, you're going to say, I need to raise prices in order to keep that rent in line, so at least it's at the same level that I bought it at for the time being to get my hands around everything. Mm-hmm. And then you look at, you know, where do I find them and what do I want to do? So there's so many different levels. I'm just going to go on it and then you just ask questions.
Well, let me back us up. Let me start us here. And because I know we're going to go down rabbit trails and get into the weeds here a little bit, but let me start with, you know, as somebody who's been doing this business a long time, who knows this business at least as well as anybody I know, if not probably better than anybody I know, what can you tell us, you know, whether we're brand new or a veteran who's, you know, looking to expand our portfolio of laundromats, what can you tell us about what we should be doing when we're going to look for a laundromat or look at a laundromat and to see if it's going to be a good laundromat that we should buy? Like, what kinds of things are you doing or looking at or thinking about during that process?
Okay. So I'm going to break it in two areas. One is the cash flow and the internal workings of that particular laundromat. And then we're going to take it from the outside world. So I'm going to be a triage doctor, or I'm going to be a reporter on the scene of an accident when I drive up to a laundromat that I'm considering buying or my client is considering buying. And I'm going to stop and I'm going to just sit in the parking lot and watch what's going on. What are the tenants? Who are they? What are good tenants? Nail salons? Nah. Liquor stores? No. Bars? No. Restaurants? No. You know, dental offices? Are they going to eat my space up? Are they open on the weekends? Are they going to eat my parking? Because I'm a pig. I want all that parking to me. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm looking at. Is it, and then is it easy to get in and out of the shopping center? Is the parking in front of the sidewalk, which is in front of the laundromat, or is the parking out in the parking lot like you have at a shopping center, Target, you know, a major department store? How easy is it to get in and out? And then is it signalized? Is there a signal right there? Is there a crosswalk right there? Are my customers coming from across the street? Or are they on my side of the street? Am I down the street from a signal and a crosswalk? And is there somebody in between me or across the street that they'll go across and go to them instead of me because I'm too far down, or because they're on this side, they come to me and not to them because they don't want to cross the street? Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing I'm looking at. The next thing I'm looking at is, how do I gauge the shopping center? What kind of shopping center is it? And I kind of rate it. You can use ABCD. I can use 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever scale you want, but you just rate it. And you, when you find a 5, you know it. When you look at a 1, you know it. And so then anything in between is, and that's the paint. How does it look? How does it represent? Is it a nice monument sign? Has the landlord give a darn about it? Is there lighting at night? I'll go to the laundromat at night to see if the lighting's working. One of the other things that I'll tell you now is that if you can't get out of the car at after 9 o'clock at night on any night, you're not buying the laundromat. You will not be comfortable with it. It will scare you every time you go. If you can get out of that laundromat and you feel comfortable, you can buy it. That's a litmus test for me, for people. And even if the wife's going to run it, she's got to go look at it too. So once I've done that, then I'm going to go look at, depending upon the density of where I'm at. So if I'm rural, it's further out. Mm-hmm. If I'm city, it's closer in. So between a half and probably, you know, I don't know, a mile. And then for most of the city dwellers, and then probably 2 to 3 miles or 5 miles if you're in rural. If you've got, you really don't have a competitor for another city or town. I'm going to go and look at it. But I want to go and I want to survey that laundromat, and I want to know what their vent prices are and what machines they have and how are they operating and how busy were they the same day I was there at mine. You know, I'm there on Friday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Well, I'll be there at Friday at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. how busy, what's going on, what kind of services are they offering that I can look at? And I'll do that to every laundry and I'll make a note of each one. So at least I know what the competitors are doing. It'll also give me a leg up when I look at when I buy this store, if and when I do, what am I going to do to be competitive and am I competitive? And if I'm underpriced, I'm going to be competitive because I'm raising those prices depending upon when, what time of the season it is. Mm-hmm. So that's what I do.
What do you mean by that? What time of the season it is? What's a good what's a good time of the season to raise and not a good time?
If you were to take a scale like this, I'll write it out real quick. And you were to go like this, and you were to put January, and you were to put December, and you were to put August. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
This is what it would look like.
Okay, so just to describe that for people listening, you got January on the left.
Okay, so this is
left.
January. This is January over here, uh-huh. And that's August, and that's December. And this is about 15% less than the mean of 100, and this is about 15% higher than that. So you don't want to do anything in the summer months, but clean up and do your maintenance, your painting, your patching, your floors, your buffing, your waxings. And we can talk about what I do for clients on the days that I decide to do maintenance and I shut down the laundry and I'm a full believer in shutting the laundromat down for a day. Wednesday, middle of the summer, you have your attendant there. They hand out coupons that say one complete wash day and they give them a business card. Anybody that comes up with laundry, if the average family spends $60 a month, it's $15 you're going to spend for every client that would come in on a Wednesday, which is the slowest day of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to end up spending what? $150? $200 to take care of your customers. And you got your floors waxed. You got three coats on there and it looks really nice. So there's some strategies to go. So back to the laundry side. There we go. There's one of those rabbit holes. So
hey, I'm going to pin you down on these things. I want to know details. Make me successful. Make us all successful. I love it.
So then now I'm going to go after I've looked at the competitors and I understand what's going on there. And I'm going to start to make a notebook that basically says, here's what I plan on doing in the future. And here's how I'm going to get there. And then you do those. Then you're back in. Now I'm going to go into my laundromat. I'm going to take a photo on the outside. I'm going to walk inside and do as many panoramic photos as I can get away with. Okay. And then I'm just going to observe the laundry and see who's in there, what they're doing. You got to figure that, the demographics across the United States, there's probably 2.93 to 3.8 people per household or door or apartment, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. Or family even. Mm-hmm. And that's the number I use. So I just, I pick a mean and I say it's three or four. But so you look at a laundromat, you see on a Friday afternoon, it's really busy. How many people are doing wash? Well, it's not the sum total of everybody because somebody brought a friend. So it's usually about 2 to 1. And that'll also give you an idea of how many people you can have in your laundromat at max capacity. And that's another good number for you to save going forward when you start to analyze your store. So now I'm in the laundromat. Now I'm going to look at it. I'm going to look at equipment. I'm going to look at the brand. I'm going to look at the age. I'm going to look at the vend price.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to take a survey of inside of the laundry. I'm going to look at how many top loaders they have, how many 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 55, 60, 80. 90, 120s. I want to know what they have. And then I'm going to count the dryers. And I'm going to count the poundage of the dryers. And then I'm going to go back over to the washers and I'm going to use the poundage on the washers. Now, everybody, as a side note, everybody says, well, this manufacturer says this and this manufacturer says that. And they all say this and that. And everybody's got their calculations. Look, University of San Diego, 6 years ago, did a study on washers. And they determined, as a rule of thumb, that the average machine uses 1.3 gallons per poundage. So if you're a rated 30 pounder, it's 39 gallons of water. Now, it doesn't matter to me if you're cold wash, hot wash, permanent press wash, extra rinse, no rinse, short cycle. We're doing this. We need averages here. And with the advent of all this electronics, we've started to add more layers in there, and it's more difficult to have conversations about averages if you're continually have to layer that much on, and it becomes too complicated for people. So just as an average rule of thumb. So then I just look at the poundage and I look how much water they use. Okay. And then I look at the overall store, and then I make a list of what I'd want to do if I owned it and what I would do.
Real quick, can you give us Andy Cunningham's number for the ratio of poundage between washers and dryers? Where do you think an ideal store should be?
Oh, 100%. And I think
one to one.
I think that you should have, if you have a store that has 1,250 pounds of wash, you should have 1,250 pounds of dry available. I think you can get away with 10% less, and you can never have enough. So, and that goes to the other Andyism. I never put washers in walls. Walls are meant for dryers only, and for drink and snack, and for offices, and for fluff and fold, but never a machine. Because you rob yourself of the dryer, and at some point in time, if you were to take out all your mixes, so as you grow your store and you've got 30s, 40s, 60s, 80s, and 90s, you'll notice over time you're adding more 60s and 80s than you're adding 30s and 40s. Mm-hmm. Well, that's doubling or changing your poundage. And then it's going to come at a critical mass where you look at yourself and say, oh my God, I'm at that 90%. I need more dryers. And you look over and you've got four 90 pounders in the wall. Now you're talking about major reconstruction when you should have 5 years ago or 8 years ago, not put them in the wall, put them where the 20 pounders were.
Mm-hmm.
And remove some of the smaller machines as you start to get bigger. So I just kind of stay away from, and if I see somebody that has two or three washers that need to be replaced and they're in the wall, I don't have them put them back in the wall. I seal it off and call it a day because I'm going to eventually need dryers. Dryers. You never have enough dryers. You can never have enough makeup air.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, that was the hot topic from your last episode. A lot of people, the two most common things that people commented on last episode and the topics of discussion were that makeup air. It was really, to me at least, a surprising hot button issue where people were having a lot of conversations on our forums, on Facebook groups with me about makeup air. And I'm like, where does my life come to where I'm having all these conversations about makeup air for dryers?
Well,
the other one that was surprising to me that a lot of people commented on was your carts theory, about having a lot of extra carts. And a lot of people commented on that too. Very interesting.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, the question is, did it resonate with them at the grocery store and the analogy? You're like, yeah, I would.
Yeah. Well, I can't even tell you, at least a dozen people told me personally that they were buying more carts as a result of that episode.
Rick Rollins, are you listening?
Yeah. I mean, it's too soon to say whether it was a good decision for them or not, but
sometimes you just can't have enough. I don't think you can ever have enough air. And truthfully, there comes a point where you'll have too many carts, but not normally.
Real quick, I don't want to go too far down the makeup air rabbit hole because I don't want to be having all these discussions about makeup air.
We can make another show of that.
Yeah, we can. We'll do a whole webinar on makeup air if you're interested.
I would love to do that with you.
Yeah, just let us know if you're interested. We'll get that on the calendar. But real quick, are there signs to look for that you don't have enough makeup air? Or you just don't have enough makeup air, no matter what, so have more.
I can answer that, but you become sleuths, which is good. But I can answer you with the 80-20 rule.
Okay.
80% of the laundromats are insufficient in makeup air and combustion air, and 20%, between 0 and 20%, get the picture.
Okay.
And even those towards the 18 and 20 are, marginal. But you have lint in places you never thought you'd see it. Okay.
Like my belly button, right?
Yeah, well, and I went into a laundromat the other day. This is a great story. And they had vents in the walls at waist high.
Mm-hmm.
And there were three dryers in the office. So you had an office, and which you shared with three dryers. And then there was a vent that was probably that wide by 4 feet tall. And it had all the slats and the chicken wire mesh. And I opened up the door and I stood there, and you could just feel the air go right across my face, and you could see it coming in. And I've got only three dryers here, and they're all going, and I'm looking at that going, well, if that doesn't tell you that those things are starving for air, and they burn best when you just put their to the back of them to the outside. So to answer your question, so that's, yes, take a piece of lint and go to your laundromat, go to the door that opens up access to your dryers on a busy Saturday, and put that lint under the door and watch it go, whoosh, gone. You go, oh, yep, it's just sitting there trying to suck more air, more air.
So basically what I'm saying is I'm hearing is the rule of thumb is you just don't have enough makeup air. So just put the back of your dryers outside and you'll be good to go.
Yeah, you can, you're going to say, how do I get it? So we're going to do another podcast, and we'll talk about makeup air, because I have some things to let the industry know.
Okay.
They're just not getting the information that they need. And it's practical. It's not technical. And that's what I like about it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm all about giving the practical stuff. So we'll do something on makeup air. I love that.
Okay. All right.
And I'll just brace myself for having more of those conversations with people for a few weeks. And
send them to me. I'll answer the questions.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
Send me a bunch of questions. We'll answer them.
Talk to Andrew. I'll tell you how at the end of this episode, how you can get a hold of him.
So we're going back to the laundry. So now I've looked at the site, I've looked at the competition. Now I'm looking at the laundromat, and I'm gathering that information. And now I've pretty much finished my analysis of the store. I'm going to go home and make some notes. My notes are,
what are you looking for in the competition? I mean, I'm assuming you're looking at vent prices, what sizes machines they have, how busy they are. What else?
How clean, how well represented is it compared to what I'm doing, what I'm buying? And then I know that I'm going to make mine better going in there, like paint. You know, there isn't a laundromat for the most part that couldn't use a can of paint. So, and you need to do some stucco, you know, you need to replace your ceiling tiles. Oh, here's your first tip of the day.
All right, let's hear it.
When replacing ceiling tiles for water spots, just put the new one underneath the old one.
Mm.
Let the old one act as a sponge, and you won't get that water spot for some time now. And you won't have to worry about it, because most of the water spots are not roof leak. It's water traveling down a line from a condensation or something. And it's, you don't have to replace it every week and say, how come that thing's leaking? I have a leaky roof. And you don't.
Good tip.
Getting back to, so now I'm going to go look at the financial numbers of the laundromat. And I'd like to get a profit and loss statement for the last 12 months. 18's okay, but I'm going to discount most of it. But I might catch it and make it 14 months, 15 months. I just want to see. I want to see if I'm trending up or down. Now, when I'm looking for trends, I'm not looking for trends on the utility bills as it relates to the cost of the utility, because all utility companies regulate and vary their costs per unit. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at usage. So I'm going to put a chart together that shows me the gas, water, and electric, and whatever unit, therms, kilowatts, cubic feet, I'm just going to track it all together to see if the percentages are the same. Those should pretty much always be constant. I mean, if you're doing XYZ dollars in wash, you're doing a certain percentage in dry as a rule of thumb, and then that ratio between the gas and the water should be the same as it is between the electric and now. The exception to the rule would be anybody east of Colorado, which uses air conditioning, maybe even Arizona. I think California is one of the only states that doesn't use air conditioning in the laundromats because it's just too darn expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas other places do because of the humidity and the heat, and we use swamp coolers. So without giving both sides of the equation, I'm looking for trends. And so I'm going to have to figure out on the East Coast, where you pay for air conditioning and you have that feature, how much more does that add to your laundry above and beyond the electricity that it takes for you to run your machines and what have not? So there's a there is an area there that I'm not sure of percentage wise. Mm-hmm. But again, I'm just looking for a trend, and I'm looking for a spike so I can see what happened at that spike. Mm-hmm. So you have fixed expenses in your listing and your profit loss, you have variable. Utilities are variable, and they should run on an average of X percent every month until you start playing with your vend prices, and that will adjust. But everything else is fixed, and everything else you can figure out. The only two areas that are weak in verification, and that is parts and labor to keep the machines running, mm-hmm. and labor and you know, I usually ask somebody, do you have a copy of their schedule, the employee schedule, and what, you know, what pay? LA County is on $15 an hour minimum wage. And I think I add about 20% onto that for workers' comp. It's a blanket. I think it's 17 and a half, but I just add 20 and say that's a ballpark. I'm close. Mm-hmm. As with all of these profit and loss statements that you get at most good, most guys who handle brokerage, the sale of laundromats, can get you into the ballpark and about pitcher's mound, but they can never get you to home plate because they're not running it and they're not operating it and they're not collecting it. They're not mm-hmm. paying the bills. But you can get close, but it's not possible to get spot on.
Right.
And then I look at that. So you got your rent and you got all your, and then I look at the two that we talked about, which was labor. And I ask them for that. And then I do my own math on it. And then the other one, which is parts of labor. And I find it interesting that someone would say, well, I do my own repairs. And I'm like, oh, fantastic. I am so glad you do your own repairs. But imagine if you were owned a small car rental agency, and you rented out your 15 or 20 exotic cars that you have there, and things are going gangbusters for you. And but at 6:30 at night, you go home and you grab a quick sandwich and kiss the wife on the cheek while she's got two newborns at home or pretty close to it. And you're going to go back and be Mr. Mechanic, and you're going to fix those nice Porsches, and there's Lamborghinis and the Ferraris. And then at 4 o'clock in the morning, you're going to come home and get 2 hours worth of sleep. And you're going to do it all over tomorrow. And I say, I think that's wonderful and that's fantastic for you to get ahead. But the real life is, so you got to pay for somebody to do those repairs. Yeah. So you actually have to have an input of numbers on repairs to normalize your listing or normalize your profit and loss statement. It just, I'm happy you can do it alone. I think that's great. But for the most part, something has to go in those numbers, and it can't be zero. And it certainly can't be a number that you look at it and you go, you can't buy a water pump for that much, for that little of a amount. You know, a belt's $45. So it's like, you know, so those are the areas that I look at. And I actually sit
real
down.
Quick, I would say the same thing for those laundromats where the owner does all the work, right? They clean the laundromat, or maybe they attend it.
Yes.
That's fine and all, but you include those expenses for that labor as if you were paying yourself as the employee, because it will dramatically alter the valuation of that business if you don't include that, and not in your favor. We talked about this on the last episode, but you're going to instantly lose a whole lot of equity if you buy it without taking those expenses out.
The interesting thing is you're paying yourself. Mm-hmm. You're just like, what side of the fence are you paying yourself? You're paying yourself in the cash flow that you're getting from the laundromat. Fantastic. Oh, that's okay. But the other side of it is you've now just switched it over to the other side where you're showing a new buyer that there is a fee. And I'm paying myself this because I was getting it over here. Now it's on this side of the fence. All you did was move which side of the box it went in, and you're still paying that kind of labor. So yeah, the answer, yeah, you're absolutely correct.
Yeah.
They need to add it. Yep.
Yeah. And I see that all the time for first time buyers where they're not thinking about that. Especially if they're coming in planning on, hey, I want to run it, you know, myself for a while. Well, that's fine. Like if you want to buy a laundromat and you want to be the one to clean it, that's totally fine. But you still should evaluate it as if you're paying yourself as the attendant, because that's you are the attendant.
Yeah. So I mean, you want to pay yourself a check.
Yeah.
It's just which side of the accounting box you really want to be on. So then I sit down and I look at the cash flow from the business, and then I will sit down with the buyer and find out what the buyer wants to do and how they want to go, and we try to price it along the lines of about a 20% return, 20 to 25, mm-hmm. and see if the buyer will take it or the seller will take it. Now, in most cases here, unfortunately, in California, you don't really have a lot of co-operating brokers cooperating with each other. And you certainly don't have an MLS where you can actually go out and see a listing that's available and call on it. And if it's available, go and take your client to it and then write an offer on it. So it's a little bit different here. But for the most part, I think that the broker's responsibility as a broker is to guide the buyer through the entire process. And that is, even after you have a deal, what happens after an acceptance? Mm-hmm. What am I looking for? So, you know, you get an offer and acceptance, and you go back and forth on a price, and you go back and forth on terms, and you settle on all that. You know, you've got let's just say you got a lease assignment in there, and you also have financing as a contingency. What does escrow do? Who's responsible for what in this area? You've done all your due diligence. You've done your utilities. You made sure that all the expenses were correct. And the only thing that you don't really know about is the volume of the store.
Mm-hmm.
Anymore today, you try to get either bank statements or collection reports or actually tax returns.
Mm-hmm.
And the hardest part is getting the tax returns to match up, because everybody's creative on how they write off their businesses. And it doesn't matter. It's still not going to get to the penny. And then if you get an actual collection report, you can do some extrapolations from that on a spreadsheet, and you look at it. What am I doing on an annual basis or a monthly basis? Or a daily basis, which gets us to turns per day,
mm-hmm.
Income per day. And then you break it down to turns per day. And then you'll find out your ratios between your washers amongst themselves, mm-hmm. and then the dryers. And then you start to be able to look at how do I manage my store, which we'll talk about once we get in there. So you're going to do your due diligence. And if your due diligence proves out, I usually have my buyers have basically a non-contingency escrow. Most contracts now require you to forfeit your deposit if you quit,
mm-hmm.
for no legitimate reason.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge with that is, of course, that the seller has to agree to it, and the seller has to sign off on it, or you won't get your money back. And so I try to make them as much as non-contingency. I even try to get a verbal on the financing so that I'm not going to hit a roadblock. And then I try to get a feel for the lease assignment. And that would be the only thing that would be a hiccup in my deal, which would be basically, look, that money's not going to get forfeited if you can't get a lease assignment.
Mm-hmm.
I just that gets us to leases. And what do you want to know about leases? And as a quick note, I ran into one today where the lease, and this is just absolutely ludicrous. The landlord says in there, the landlord reserves the right to delay, condition, or withhold the assignment.
Well, isn't that a doozy? Well, that just holds everything up. I mean,
why would you buy it?
Yeah, you can't.
Even if you got over that, how would it be here next to the next guy that comes along and you're going to sell your laundry and you're going to try to explain to them, oh, no, they're really good about this. So there's the value of the lease and there's the value of cash flow. So you really have to be able to watch it. So I try to make the escrows that I go into as non-contingency as possible, with the exception of the lease and financing.
Yeah.
And then,
I don't know about you, but I've found that, which is a little bit surprising to me, but that negotiations have been a little bit tough lately with landlords and trying to, this has been my experience. I think some landlords have been gun shy to sign long-term leases lately for laundromat owners for whatever reason. I don't know if they're worried that rents are going to go up and they're not going to keep up. I don't know if you've had that experience, but I've had that experience in the last couple of deals that I've been working on. And it's been just kind of an interesting, maybe it's just anecdotal in my experience. Well,
I think the market's changed. I think that you have, I think you have a changing of the guard. I think you have old money that's old, and I mean mm-hmm. 70s or 80s mm-hmm. that are passing on properties to their heirs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're finding a different mentality and a different school of thought. And it's difficult. The leases are shorter. People are accepting shorter leases than they were before.
Mm-hmm.
And that affects value, as you and I both know. Plus it affects saleability. So that maybe I take a 13-year lease and I keep the laundromat for 6 years and I sell the laundromat, but I don't have an option. And the new guy comes in and he wants a 5-year option. You're at a difficult part in the negotiations with that landlord, knowing full well that he just passed or you passed a couple of years ago, and now the son or the daughter is running it, and it's a whole different mindset. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and they don't understand. The other thing they don't understand is two very vital things that I could tell anybody negotiating with a landlord with a lease. And that is, number one, divide your gross income by $50 or $60, and that's how many people you bring every week to that shopping center. Mm-hmm. Every week. You know, your guy doing $60,000 and it's 50. You do the math. That's $1,200 a week.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money. That's a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, you're not like Sally's Nails or Bill's Liquor. You're putting in $750,000. You're putting in $1 million, and you're not putting in a $150 dress shop or a $75 nail salon and calling it a day. So your mm-hmm. capital investments are far greater than most tenants, period.
And you can't move them.
What's that?
And you can't move them. You can't relocate. It's there right. Or it's nowhere.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And so if they get on board with, I got someone who's going to put that much money into their business, that's investment of cash. Mm-hmm. And then they're going to bring that many clients or people to my shopping center so that the other businesses can enjoy that.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of tenant I want.
Right.
And I don't think that people are selling it, or at least they know about it, and they should be. So that's one of the key things that they should actually be using. So now that I've got it and I'm going to get to escrow, what's the responsibilities of the escrow? Oh, so a couple of things, and this will be a good argument, a good conversation for a lot of beers. Who pays for lease assignment?
Yeah. I mean,
Now here's my philosophy.
Yeah.
Whose lease is it?
Well, I mean, it's the seller's lease. Yeah.
Then it's the seller's responsibility to get that assignment, take care of all the fees, to make sure that tenant has, that new guy has everything. And most people say, oh, no, the buyer should. No. You're selling the equipment. You're selling the tenancy. You're selling everything about that laundromat. And you're selling that lease. Mm-hmm. And as part of that is a lease assignment. And the responsibility is yours. It's not the buyer's. Mm-hmm. Now, if you get a buyer to pay for it, congratulations.
Yep.
But
power to you.
The real thing is that you're assigning everything. He's paying for the business license. He's paying for everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It doesn't stop at that and go, you know, that $1,200 assignment fees. If you don't want to pay it, call up the landlord and negotiate it with them. Because you're the one that has the relationship, not the buyer.
Mm-hmm.
So again, getting back to, I try to make it as contingency free. And then what happens during escrow, I will tell you and everybody, and I think there's some people who've had experiences with good escrows and bad escrows, but for the most part, the escrow officer is God. Send her a pound of See's candy when you're done with her and thank her for her work, because they do a lot of work behind the scenes that you and I would not even think of.
Yeah.
I mean, they're worth every penny that they ask for. And what is it now? $350 plus $3 per thousand? Is that, yeah, I mean, or $700 plus $3 per thousand or whatever. I mean, it's the amount of work that they do and the legal stuff that they get to do is so far out of our grasp that I'm happy that we have them.
Well, I will tell you that a good escrow agent makes a broker's job so much easier, and a bad one will make a broker's job so much more difficult.
A nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Absolute nightmare. So when we go over the escrow instructions, I go over through the body of the, and then it gets to the boilerplate and I go, you can't touch it, sign it. It's there to protect you.
Yep.
And that's really what it is.
Yep.
So now you have a non-contingency escrow. Basically, you're waiting for financing, which you got a verbal on, mm-hmm. and you're waiting for the lease assignment, which you can pretty much quasi agree that you're going to get the lease assignment.
Mm-hmm.
You've read the clauses. You've looked at it. You make sure that the landlord cannot unreasonably withhold, delay, or condition it. Right. Now, I find that they like to condition it more than they're willing to delay or withhold.
Mm-hmm.
And so now it becomes, what's the conditioning? And then you have a very interesting fine line between what you can and can't condition.
Yep.
And it could be even construed and probably fought and probably won that the guy or the entity that's buying the laundry has to have a greater net worth than the guy who's selling it, because that would be financial. You're gonna nail them for not being as have as much money as them, and it doesn't mean they're not qualified.
Mm-hmm.
So you're gonna tip the scales in that area. So. And then, I mean, that's it. Then you've got an escrow and hopefully it closes within 45 days. Your standard escrow is 30 to 45 days. The escrow officer has to publish a sale in a newspaper of general circulation for 12 business days. And it depends on what newspaper they register with. To get that service done, whether or not they accept bulk transfer data on a Tuesday and not on a Thursday, and it's already mm-hmm. Friday, and you have to wait till the following Thursday, so you add on that many days. And I thought you said it was 12. Yeah, well, they didn't accept the paperwork. So, but for the most part, once that's finished, you can pretty much close your escrow. And then during escrow, there are collection reports. People are worried whether or not guys go in there and salt their boxes. And what I like about the new hybrid and the new card stores is obviously you're going to get a report. You don't even need a collection.
Yeah.
You're going in there to figure out how they work within the laundry to collect the video games and collect all those other things and do the wash, dry, and fold and understand how all that goes together. Yeah. I mean, I think that's where bulk of the time is going to be. I would recommend that everybody find an employee, if they keep the employees and they find the employee to teach them as a trainer or to create them as a trainer and have them train all the other employees. That leads you to your next thing, which is your manual, and that they've all read it. They all understand it. And this lady trained them and they got trained and they sign off on it so that they're, you know, for the most part, there isn't an excuse if all the power goes out. What's the most important thing to do? And that kind of stuff. we could do a whole thing on that, and pretty much, you know, what constitutes an emergency, and you know, why are you calling me when there's a, you know, just turn off the machine, you know, that kind of stuff.
Where, right? Yeah.
You know, but you forgot to tell them, and that's the challenge. No one told you you're supposed to tell them. You expect that after them being there for a year, they knew what was going on, and it's usually not the case.
I mean, that brings up a big question for me then is, what about the first time owner who doesn't know any of that stuff either? Is that just something they have to kind of build out over time? Are there resources that can help them figure out like what should be in that manual? What should they do? What does constitute an emergency? You know what I mean? Because, you know, if employees don't know, and a first time owner is not going to know.
No. And I'm going to tell you that probably a sprinkling of laundry owners today couldn't tell you.
Yeah. Oh, probably a dousing. Of
Yes. So, you know, what does constitute an emergency? Well, obviously loss of power. And I instruct all the, I mark on the electrical panel in the back room so that the employees know mm-hmm. that you shut off everything but the lights.
Because mm-hmm.
when that power comes back on, it's going to surge. And if you have older machines, it's going to fry computer boards. And now you're going to be without your machines. And of course, when those lights come back on, you can obviously turn on the rest of the power. Mm-hmm. But that also requires them to get a flashlight and help people evacuate and lock the doors, because no one's going to be in the laundromat without any power whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So the first thing is, what do? You go to your flashlight, you know, you've got your keys, you're going to usher everybody out, you know, and perhaps then you take names and phone numbers, and where's your laundry and where's your loads, so that they can come back in the morning and collect their stuff. And, you know, you'll, as an owner, I would pay for it. It wouldn't even be a question. I just say it'll be all washed and dried and be ready for you tomorrow afternoon or whatever the case may be when I get power back on, and you won't have to worry about your water and I'll get it done.
Right.
And then what constitutes, you know, after that point in time, it's mostly it's fire or police. And it's just a basic list. It doesn't have to be a lot. It's just they have to do something. Mm-hmm. Who gets the first phone call? Well, you should have called me first. I could have resolved the issue. So there's a priority of when they call and who they call. Yeah. But it's probably not more than 10 items on a piece of paper. And it just starts the process under which you get to employees, whether good working employees, and they know more than your average person who's just picking up a broom and sweeping and cleaning, and they can't wait to get off in 4 hours, and that's the end of it. So I'll try to kind of keep like family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I've been writing down some questions. I don't know. Can I fire them off? Or are you still going? You let me know.
No, I'm open. Go ahead.
Okay. Let me go back to this in terms of evaluating a laundromat. I'd love to talk a little more specifically about demographics. I get this question a lot of, okay, if I go and get a demographics, you know, report, and, you know, speaking of which, if you're looking for demographics reports, you know, there's a solid free resource. I'll put a link to it down in the description that you can use to get demographic reports. But let's say you get a demographics report and you're looking at all these numbers, what in the world am I supposed to be looking for in a demographics report?
Well, that's the secret sauce.
All right.
I will share with you.
Let's do it. Let's do the secret sauce right now.
All right. So
listen up. It's the secret sauce.
Because this pretty much lays into your financial the facets of making money, getting a return on your investment. Mm-hmm. How do I improve? Can I improve? An old soul in the industry. Now, remember, for those who have forgotten or don't know me, I started in 1985. So I'm going to tell you that sometime in the late 80s, I was taught by a wonderful gentleman of one of the original PWSs. And his philosophy was this, and it's held true, that the area that you're talking about, wherever it is, has the potential for X dollars a month for laundry. And that would include apartments, but I discount apartments. And I even said this on Facebook last week in the laundry section. Someone was talking about it. I go, apartments that have washers and dryers in their units are called condominiums.
Yeah, right.
Well, at least here they are. I mean, maybe on the East Coast or the Midwest, they call them apartments. But if you have a washer and dryer in your apartment, you're not part of the group that I want. Mm-hmm. You're not my client. And, I can't say that absolutely, because you're going to have comforters and larger things that you're going to want to wash, but you're going to be, you know, a 2-time-a-year client. Okay. And that's gravy. I don't include you in my calculations, because if I have to rely on you, I'm going to fail.
You're in trouble. Yeah. You're in trouble.
I'm in trouble. So, the first thing I look at it is again, we're going to start with the big picture. The big picture is, where are you? In the United States or in Malaysia or wherever else, where are you? And you as an individual, along with your broker, if they're savvy enough, have to decide which radius you're going to play with. Is it 5 miles away? Is it 3 miles? Is it a mile, mile and a half? Is it a half a mile? I can't tell you what that is. Mm-hmm. But that's the first thing that I look at. So if I'm looking for a if I can ask for a demographic report, I'm going to use Los Angeles as an example. I'm going to get a mile, a half a mile, a mile, and a mile and a half. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not going to even bother to look at the mile and a half because I'm not drawing a mile and a half. I'm drawing anywhere between 1/10 and 3/10 of a mile in LA because it's so dense. Mm-hmm. So it's a half a mile radius. And so I look at the number of people in a half a mile radius and I automatically go and find the number of renters. And I multiply the number of renter percentage into the total number of population. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing. And, you know, so as an example, there's 10,000 people in a half a mile radius and there's 78% renters. Well, I'm going to take 78% of the renters, and now I'm going to have 7,800 people in a half a mile. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to multiply that by $50 or $60. And just for argument's sake, while someone's driving and they don't have to get out their calculator, because I'll do it for them. We said 6,800, right? Times, and let's just use 50 as a low number. There's $34,000 a month available in that radius for laundry to be had. Mm-hmm. You've got two laundromats, including you. You're both going to be clicking along at about $10,000 a month. Mm-hmm. So you have to figure out whether or not if it's worth it for you to be there or how you can be better. Mm-hmm. And those numbers are low because we don't see those numbers. You know, I think Third in Normandy, where I built my second store in 1997, had 53,000 people in a half a mile.
Yeah, right.
A half a mile.
Yeah.
53,000.
Insanity.
Very much so. So first one I'm looking for is what is my radius? That's the first thing. Mm-hmm. Second thing I'm looking for is population. Third thing I'm looking for is renter. Then I'm looking for per capita income, because I know poverty is around $25,000 a year. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'm going to see what the per capita is for that household. And then that's going to reveal to me, or I can figure out how many people live per household. And so those are really the numbers that I use. I also will look at the nationalities. And
what are you doing with the income amount, the median income amount? What are you doing with that number?
Ignoring it.
Okay. Okay.
Because I'm either going to get it in wash, dry, and fold, mm-hmm. or I'm going to get it in coin.
Okay.
One or the other. And that will indicate to me if I go look at, and I'll trade nationalities for $4. Okay. And that is, if it's a heavy Hispanic, low income, I'm not worried about wash, dry, and fold. Mm-hmm. If I've got a plethora of college students, or that's where I'm at, then I'm going to start to look at the wash, dry, and fold area, and I'm going to use a higher number. But I got to weigh what I'm there. And for me, since I'm myopic from where I'm at in LA, there's a certain set of certain things that I look for, and I go to and I gravitate towards them. And then, you know, I'll take, like I said, I'll look at an area, and maybe there's five laundromats in a half a mile, mm-hmm. but there's 30,000 people in a half a mile radius. Mm-hmm. And 90% of them are renters, which is 27,000. 27,000 times $50 per person. There's $1 million worth of laundry available.
Right, divided by the number of people in the household. So if it's about 3.5, that's about $300,000 worth of income available.
People go, that's not possible. I go, yes, it is possible, because those people need to do laundry. Mm-hmm. And if 70% of them are not Hispanic, but are renters, where are they doing their wash right now? So 10% in the apartment building that they're in, because all they have is top loader and they have the standard top load style front load or dryer. It's the same box, same cubic foot, 12 and 12. They're going to do their wash on a Wednesday night, and they're going to go down there and they're going to start at 5 o'clock, and somebody's going to have three machines used up and you can't start your wash and you don't want to touch their clothes. And the next thing you know, it's Thursday night and Friday and then Saturday. And then you find out in this apartment building, you can't do the laundry when you want to do it. Mm-hmm. You're going to the local mat. That's how it. And then if you're a little bit more upwardly mobile, you're going to have somebody do it for you.
With so wash, dry, fold, right?
Yeah, with wash, dry, fold. Delivery. Yeah. Right. But I still have you're still my audience, and that's mm-hmm. the audience I want to go after. So those are the things that I look at when I look at demographics, and I have a demographic program, I signed up for an annual thing. It's probably, I don't know, $350, but I get exactly the four or five things I'm looking for. I highlight them and I use them because it's a wealth of information. And it kind of gives you a guiding light as to where you're going. I do want to get back to, we'll catch up on some other things, but what's your next question?
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay. I have one more. I have a bunch that I've written down, but I have one more that I would love your input on. I think I get asked this question a lot, and I think your take on this would be interesting for people to hear. But what do you do with let's say you're interested in maybe something like a zombie mat or a laundromat that doesn't really have books to look at, or maybe it's just breaking even. Should you value that? Should you buy a laundromat like that? And if so, how do you evaluate that?
Yeah, opportunity wise. So we take my demos. I'm going to see, can it support one? Number one. Number two, if I've done my homework correct, when I looked at this location and I studied the location, I went in there and I looked at, is it a scary place or is it a place I can go to? Right? Where is it located? If I do my steps correctly, it's going to reveal something that other people aren't seeing. A, B. The next most important thing is that lease. If I can get a real good lease with that zombie mat, I'll take it over in a second.
Mm-hmm.
In a second. If I haven't got a lease, then that tells you the story of why it turned into a zombie mat to begin with.
Yeah.
I mean,
what's a good lease?
What's a good lease?
It's obviously going to vary.
Yes, it'll vary in years. what would I sign? I probably, depending upon anything over, if I invested over $50,000, I would want nothing short of 12 years.
Yeah.
If I'm going to get up into the $500,000 or $750,000, I'm going to want at least the existing term plus 3 5-year options minimum. Mm-hmm. And those options are to be the same terms as the existing lease without other than the increase negotiations.
Right.
You don't get to just say, you know what? I'm going to take $20,000 a month for rent. Okay.
Yeah.
And then it's, I'm going to trick it out to where I'm going to build it for horsepower build it for horsepower. And that means I'm going to dispense with the smaller machines. I'm probably going to start off with a 30 and I may price it just a skosh low, but then my 40s, my 60s, and my 80s will be at or near or equal to or greater than the prices that are in the marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll do those 30 pounders at a lower price for maybe 6 months at the most, and that's it. Then I'll bring them up to speed where they are with the rest of them, just to get people into the laundry. I love the fact that dryers are now at 6 minutes or 10 minutes for a dry. But I also take that cool down period and I go from 2 minutes to 4 minutes.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm not burning that extra 2 minutes of gas on any of my cycles. If you put your dryers at the hottest settings, you won't have a problem with people saying it's not hot enough. It'll only be hot. Here's another one. Oh, by the way, yes, you can tell when a laundromat's not sufficiently getting makeup air is when you can put your hand on the back of the dryer at its highest temperature at a 195 and you don't burn your hand.
Yeah.
It's just not getting hot enough. And therefore, it's not getting enough air. So sounds it's like burning improper.
Yeah, it sounds like a great test to try all the time.
It is. I walk in the laundromat, put the back of my hand on that laundromat. If it burns, I go, okay, that thing's hot. Okay, it's working just fine.
Yeah. Maybe you should get one of those temperature laser guns so you don't have to burn the back of your hand. I don't know.
No, they may think you're weird.
Yeah. Okay. But they don't think you're weird if you're burning your hand all the time?
You just walk by it, you put your hand against the glass, you're walking down the aisle.
You're good to go. Okay. All right. Yeah, well, that's good input. Cause I mean, I get asked that all the time. And I think, you know, how I look at it is when you're buying a laundromat, you're buying cash flow, right?
Right.
And I say there's a threshold there. and I put it around 100, 125, somewhere in that grand or less, where you may not be buying the cash flow at that point. Maybe you're buying a little bit of cash flow, but there's more that comes into it at that point. Cause that, you know, if you're down under $100,000 for most laundromats, the laundromat's probably really not making too much money, or it has a lot of deferred maintenance. You're going to have to come in and do a lot of work or something like that. So there, generally speaking, there is value in that laundromat still. Maybe it's not in the equipment and maybe it's not in the cash flow, but there is value to be had there, potentially in a lease. Maybe if it's in a really good lease, or potentially if, you know, it's just the infrastructure that's there and maybe the location that it is. And the laundromat's just been mismanaged. But I think there's a threshold in there somewhere where there's still some value in the laundromat, but you're not really buying the cash flow. You're buying the opportunity to create some cash flow in that location.
You're buying the opportunity.
Yeah.
And there's one of two things. You either buy it and run it or buy it and flip it.
Yeah.
I mean, those are what they are. And there are a few out there. They're just hard to find. And that goes back to looking at what my competitors are, and you have to look at it and you go, is that place going to be around in 2 years while I will be? You know, those are the people that I'm going to contend with. And then the people on the outer edges of my fringe area, I'm only worried about the guys across the street. You know what I mean? Because that's where if somebody has to go past me to get to another laundromat, then I'm not doing something right. And I got to figure out, I don't want anybody passing me up to go somewhere else.
Right. Yeah. And I think if you're buying a laundromat in that price range, just for anybody who's thinking about it, I don't think it's necessarily a no-go for you. But I do think, number one, that you got to anticipate putting some money into it. Number two, you're probably going to need to be putting some extra time into it. It's not going to be a you buy it, collect the quarters every week. Not that any laundromat really is, but especially not a laundromat like that that's under 100 grand that needs some fixing up. And real quick, you also have to go into that with a plan of how you're going to turn that laundromat around. And it's got to be a solid plan, I think.
Right. So imagine for a moment that you've got a small store. I don't know, call it 2,500 square foot store. And you've just closed escrow and you paid 150 for it. And it throws off, I don't know, $6,000 a month. And you find out it's really only throwing off about three. But that's just what it is. It's still positive cash flow. You're just not going to get the greatest return on your money. And you say, well, what can I do here? You know, and you need help. You ask around. And my opinion would be, well, let's look at the competition and look at what you have. And then I would probably look at it and say, okay, you're paying $1,200 a month for labor for fixing this stuff. Mm-hmm. So, all right. So that's $1,200. And you're always going to have somebody coming in here. So let's cut it in half and say $600. $600 is going to be your labor, which you will always have. $600 is the parts that you won't have anymore. And then you look at it and you say, okay, I'm going to put $100,000 in new equipment or used equipment. It doesn't matter. You're going to make sure your ratios of your dryers are correct to your washers, or you're going to be close. You know what I mean? And all of a sudden, you know, you've got $100,000. Well, what is $100,000? 12% to 1.4. So it's $2,100 a month for $100,000 equipment at 5 years at 12%. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, now you can minus $600 from that. And now I really only have to come up with $1,400, $1,500 a month in cash flow. Well, if the average person spending $50 on a laundromat, divide that by 50 bucks. Oh my God, I only need 30 more customers in this laundromat to pay for that equipment. Mm-hmm. Well, who in their right mind wouldn't do that? Yeah. You'll need 30 more people, just 30 more out of this whole plethora of people out here. So it gives you an idea to say, it's not, I can't afford it. The question is, how do I get those 30 extra people in my laundromat? Mm-hmm. All you need 30, and you can pay for your new equipment and have new equipment in that store. And that doesn't even include vent price raises because you put new equipment in. That only
includes savings.
That only includes getting 30 more people there. So what if I only got 10 more people in there? And the difference of the 20 more people is the fact that I raised that machine 25 cents and that machine 25 cents to bring them in, and they're paying that. And now I've made up for that payment. So you should be looking at the internal numbers that you and I talk about, which is turns per day, how many people are coming to your laundromat, The one, the number that you gave you at $50 per visit. Some people say it's 70. Well, it might be 70 in a college town. It might be, you know, in Northern California, I see that they're getting $16 for a 90-pound machine or $14. Who ever heard of those prices? You don't get those here. Different markets.
The Midwest, they have those prices. I don't know how they...
Okay, so they're getting $70 a person. So use 70 or 75 when you want to divide your and do your math for your customers.
Mm-hmm.
And if you divide that, that's less than $20 a visit. So people that are buying those stores, the zombie mats, there's a way to look at it rather quickly if you know the numbers to look at, mm-hmm. is to look at it and go, that makes sense. I can do that. Mm-hmm. And more people would be taking them and more people would be saying, I'm not getting rid of this laundromat because someone's telling me, here's the roadmap. Here's how you need to go about what you need to do to be more successful.
Yeah. But here's the difficulty with the people who own it is they have run their business with a certain mindset. I have found that most zombie mats are a zombie mat because of one of two, if not both of these reasons. And number one is they got into a really bad lease and they just couldn't keep up with it. Right. And or number two, they have not reinvested into their business. They run it into the ground and then they want to just dump it, right? They don't want to put money back into it.
Right.
And that is a mindset shift that's difficult to make for somebody who's run their business this way for a really long time. So shifting that mindset and saying, okay, well, all I need is 30 more customers. How am I going to get it? And I'm going to, you know, put $100,000 or however much into the business. That's a difficult mindset shift for that. But that does create an opportunity for someone who can have that mindset and who can think about things in those terms to be able to come in and add a lot of value to that laundromat, to that community, to those customers, and in turn, add more customers and more revenue to that laundromat.
Absolutely. And I think that if you have a broker, which you should, that's the person that should be walking you through the landmines mm-hmm. to show you this is how you do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've always said it doesn't matter to me the equipment. It's who's available and who can have it repaired when you need it repaired. Mm-hmm. That's the manufacturer that I want. It's not, I don't have a specific brand, only because, well, it wouldn't be fair to everybody else if you started backing up one brand and not another. But washing machines are like tires on a car. A couple of brands, they all make them. They're good machines. They'll last you what they want them to do. You got to find one that you can get parts readily available and someone can service it. That's really the bottom line for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that's the biggest, I think that's one of the biggest challenges we have in this industry is getting repair people to come to your laundry, to do it when they say they would do it, to charge you a fair price, to get in and get out and finish the job, and then they're done. That's another podcast.
Somebody please do that in LA. I, for the life of me, cannot get a mechanic to stick. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
It's hard.
It's a nightmare.
And yet we don't want to do it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, somebody else should do it. Not me, but somebody should.
Different mindsets. So that's for me on the zombie mat. Unfortunately here in LA, the zombie mats that you see, the rents are so high that you'll never get to it. And someone said to me today, would you pay $3 a foot? And I said, well, that would depend. And they go, depend mm-hmm. on what? And I go, well, if I have a 4,000 square foot laundromat and somebody wants me to pay $3,000 a month, $3 a square foot, which would mm-hmm. be what? $12,000 a month in rent.
$12,000.
Well, that laundromat better be doing $50,000 or $60,000 for me to be able to afford that kind of rent.
Yeah.
And if it is, I'll pay the rent.
Yeah.
It's not a dollar per square foot issue. It's a percentage now of that number.
What's a good percentage for you?
Oh, I don't like to see things over 25.
That's what I...
25. And everybody would like to see them at 5, but I mean, that's not realistic. 20.
I'd like to see it at 5.
Well,
I feel like 25 is hard to get around here these days.
You're pushing that envelope between 25 and 27 and a half. And yeah. I always look at somebody and say, okay, so I go back to the survey, I pull up my survey sheets, and I'm telling you, I know how many 40 pounders are in this region, how many 50 pounds. I know all their rent prices, and I'm looking at it saying, well, here's your store,
mm-hmm.
and here's what you're doing, and here's mm-hmm. what your competitor's doing. You could afford to raise this machine and this machine up 25 cents and not be worried about a darn thing.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what will here's what I guess will happen in your store if you do that. They'll go over to the 60s or they'll funnel back into the 20s, but you won't lose those customers. The busy machines will remain busy. You'll just make more money and you can afford to pay that rent going forward. So every year you have to pick a machine that when that rent goes up, you're raising that one machine to keep up with that rent. Now you can start to tamp down that escalating percentage of rent to gross ratio over time. But you must do that in order for not to get caught behind the eight ball and 3 years later realize I'm at 30% rent to gross. I got to sell. And then you get someone like you and me coming in there and going, I'm not buying a laundromat with a 30% rent to gross ratio. Yep. Unless it's the only game in town and it's an opportunity. Mm-hmm. Different story. But that takes a heck of a lot more than looking at it from the surface and saying, there's another 5 or 10 laundries out there that don't have this kind of rent and I'm not going to pay that.
Yeah.
So.
Not for the faint of heart going that route. That's for sure.
No.
Well, let's bring this thing home. What else do you want to make sure you get across while we're doing this thing? What do you want to make sure we know about buying a laundromat or what to do after any of that?
You know, even if you're not a numbers person, I think you should look at numbers and I think they should become part of your life. In the beginning, I tell everybody in the beginning, you're going to get married to your laundromat for 60 days. You'll want to be there to hold its hand, change its diapers, make sure it's fed and everything else. And you're going to realize, gosh, this thing doesn't need me at all.
Yeah, they go from infant to teenager. Just like that.
And then you're going to be looking at different ways to raise money. And if nobody has taught you, ask. Just ask around. There's enough people around to give you the knowledge that you need to do to grow your laundromat and do the things necessary to maintain it. So for today, it's summer months for me are for doing repairs on the business, fixing the machines. Right now, there's a computer chip problem, so people can't get machines now, and it's probably 4 to 6 months before you can get something, which is an interesting dilemma that we're all faced with.
Yep.
But don't lose faith with the fact that it's not there. Just keep running your laundromat as if this is all you have and you don't have any new equipment coming in, and don't lose faith because it will get here. But I wouldn't do anything drastic until school comes back. And there's going to be some different modifications for schools and attendance and what have not. But school still signals the time where they're going to wear more clothing because it's going to get cooler. You've got fall, you've got winter. They're going to wear more clothing. They're going to do more wash. And therefore, you start to look at which machines have I not touched? What are my turns per day? How is that working? Do I need to move them in and out of my laundry by just raising one price and forcing them into other machines so I don't have traffic jams? That's what I'm doing during the summer. I'm doing the analysis in the summer. And then come fall, I'm prepared for the winter and the fall season, and I've done all of my honeydews for the year on that. Any major stuff that I'm doing for that laundromat, I'm doing it in the summer months, and I'm not going to wait till another time. And that's that's the tidbit for the day. So,
well, man, as usual, it's becoming quite the habit you have here. This has been a masterclass, both for the newbies out there trying to buy their first laundromat, but I think there's a lot of really great stuff in there for, you know, those of us who own laundromats and we're, you know, maybe thinking about buying some more and, you know, getting just a little bit more in depth and a little more detailed in our analysis, and using that to make more accurate projections as we, you know, as we're looking to invest in more laundromats. And man, really appreciate you spending the time with us. If people want to get a hold of you, maybe they got questions about buying a laundromat or about Makeup Air or whatever the case may be, what's the best way they can get a hold of you?
They can look at my website, which is laundromats-unfiltered.
Okay. .com. I'll put the link just in case
Put the link on the page.
Yeah.
And I appreciate the time today. And let's do another one. I've got a lot of things to share. And I will be interesting to see if you got a lot of feedback on what they would like to listen to. And if I have some of the expertise in that area, I'll be happy to share it with you. So
yeah,
maybe some of your listeners can say, hey, can you talk about X? And, you know, we'll go there. I do want to come back and talk about makeup air and combustion air on dryers. It would be great to get some input from the manufacturers. However, I'll just go back to the basic premise. You cannot have enough air in the back of your dryers, period. And if you go from that point, anything short of that, you'll still be getting close to your goal.
Love it. Well, we'll put something together. All right. Yeah, we'll put something together for that. If you have suggestions on things you want to hear more about from the one, the only Andrew Cunningham, shoot me an email, jordan@laudermatresource.com, and we'll put some stuff together. Maybe we'll get some webinars going and, you know, get you a platform to put some videos out there and do this thing. That'd be awesome.
Well, thanks for your time today.
Likewise. Appreciate it.
All righty. Have a good night.
Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
All right, man, that episode with Andrew was so good. He just provided so much very practical information, and even the points where I put him on the spot and I was really trying to pin him down on very specific and practical things, he rose to the occasion and brought a ton of value, I think, in this episode. So hopefully you got a bunch out of this, but at least one thing, right? In every single episode, I say, hey, let's figure out one thing that you can put into practice with your laundromat journey, because it's the action that leads us to the goals that we've set, right? So let's put those things into action. So pick one thing, maybe head over to the forums, laundromatresource.com/forums, and share the one thing that you are going to put into action from Andrew's interview today. I know for me specifically, I was taking notes. I don't know if you were watching on YouTube, you probably saw me taking a bunch of notes. I was taking notes. And the reason for that is because, you know, I'm part of an investment group called Diligence Capital Investments, and we are currently actively buying laundromats. And a lot of what Andrew was saying, I want to incorporate in what we're doing in terms of analyzing laundromat deals. So I was taking tons of notes so that we can incorporate those things into our process. And I'm super excited about it because I think, you know, I did an episode a while back about the importance of having good data. And a lot of what Andrew was talking about was, you know, how to collect good data when you're buying a laundromat, both from, you know, demographics, you know, and the surrounding areas, competitors and the layouts. I mean, all the stuff about the laundromats, you know, physical location, but also, you know, about the numbers and all that stuff. And I just thought he had a ton of great stuff to share. And for those of you guys who are maybe looking to buy a zombie mat or trying to get in this business, you know, on the lower end of the spectrum, I thought what he had to say about how to analyze a laundromat with no books or no profits was super helpful there too. So maybe that's your takeaway. But anyways, all of that I thought was amazing, and I'm wanting to incorporate that into our process with Diligence and also my own process when I'm evaluating laundromats for myself, for coaching clients, and for my, you know, my brokerage clients also. So super good. And big, huge thanks to Andrew again. Cannot wait to do some more with him. Look out for more. And I think he was super serious. Like, if you have more stuff that you want to hear from him, shoot me an email with topics that you want to hear from him about, because I think he's super serious wanting to do some webinars or videos or something along those lines to share this vast amounts of knowledge that he has. So let me know. All right, guys, hope you enjoyed it. Cannot wait to see you again next week on the Laundromat Resource Podcast. And until then, go out and take some action towards your goals. All right, guys. Peace.